outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
This time next week, you and I are going to be in the mountains of Colorado hanging out with some 20s and 30s. And it doesn't look like it's going to snow on us, so we've got good weather for this, it looks like.
Actually, quite warm weather. You might actually get to see a beautiful Colorado winter.
I might get to go for a walk in the morning without having to freeze my tissue off, huh?
And having knee-high boots for trudging through the snow. I think you're going to make it out pretty clean.
Yeah, I'm looking forward just to seeing what God has in mind for us as we kind of contemplate, ponder what he's doing among that generation of people and seeing what God might give us to pray and explore and discover. I got an email today from someone in their late 30s. Boy, I wish they were coming. They have a great story to tell. May read part of that later or next week.
Okay.
Incredible stuff going on. So looking forward to seeing what God might happen.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what he has up his sleeve. I think it's going to be a great trip, and especially for our pilot. It's a little bit smaller. We did have about roughly, with you and I, 14 people that are going to be there. Should be just a wonderful time. I can't wait to be able to get to be up in the mountains and get to see what's on the hearts of others from around the country. You know, as I'm having conversations, and some of my contacts are around the U.S., but I can't wait to see what stories other people are getting into.
That's about the right size for a good conversation, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I think much bigger than that, then you start moving more towards programming than you do actual conversation.
Yeah, so this will be fun. And got some other things on the backside of it that doing the Colorado Springs area. So looking forward to that as well.
Wayne, what are your thoughts on the holidays?
I hate the holidays. I'm the bah humbug Christmas guy, man. My family, in fact.
You're bah humbug, huh?
In fact, my family's gone crazy. It used to be, you know, after Thanksgiving, we'd pull out the Christmas decorations and the tree and all that. This time I come back from Florida and the Christmas village has already been set up. This is a week before Thanksgiving. Yeah, and then the Christmas tree went up on Tuesday before Thanksgiving. It's like, why don't we just do Christmas for Thanksgiving and be done with the whole thing? But
Sarah won't let you that fly, huh?
That doesn't fly in my family. No, it doesn't. We had a good Thanksgiving here, though. Good time with my kiddos and grandkiddos. And other than Andy wasn't here, he's in Colorado. I'll see him next week on the way into the retreat. We had a good time. So what are you thinking about the holidays?
Jess and I had a bit of a mixed experience. We had a great time. We were actually in Arizona spending time with family out there. It was a really good to see Jess's grandparents and her dad and her uncle and aunt and just some other relatives and on that side of the family. But I feel like the holidays can also be a mixed bag, I guess, a very bittersweet experience. Because I love the holidays, and yet I feel like the holidays can also be a real trigger for people as far as family relationships. And this trip was heavier. You know, Jess and I had a great time and had lots of highs, and yet there was some stuff that was pretty heavy relationally. And trying to navigate that, and you know, even Jess and I having nightmares almost every single night that we were there.
From what? I mean, what are you tracing to? Just difficult relationships inside family, or the enemy attacking you while you're out of town? What the nightmares from?
I think a little bit of both. Jess has had in the past, she's had some night terrors where she makes some really interesting sounds at night. And we had to do some pretty serious counseling and some work there, a lot of prayer and just intercession. And she hasn't had one of those for almost 2 years. And then we were in Arizona and she had a pretty good one. And so we had to work through that. And I was dreaming about clients, dreaming about family. And in all the situations, there was a lot of violence, a lot of darkness. There was murder that was involved. I mean, just awful stuff that was like, whoa, like what is going on here? It was interesting.
When you wake up, do you attach those to certain things? I mean, it just seemed like totally out of the blue, these dreams or whatever, or do they help unveil something that's going on in your heart that your mind's less resistant to? That's what I love about sleep. What I love about sleeping and dreams, even if they're hard dreams, I've had some of the best insight from God come waking out of a dream. And it doesn't mean every dream is a good one. I'd say 80% of mine are just dreams that I don't seem to go anywhere. But the 20% that seem to open up some new avenue in my heart, they both be some wonderful thing God revealed in a dream. I've had those. And I've also had those where you're in this terrible situation, tension, whatever. But when you wake up, there's an immediate connection to a real event in your life, and it gives some insight into that. So is any of that happening?
There was definitely one of the worst ones that I had. I woke up at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was dreaming about some clients that I was really concerned about going into the holidays. And I was very concerned about them potentially experiencing some abuse over the holidays. And throughout the entire night, the dream just kept picking up where it left off every time I'd fall asleep. And these clients were getting horrifically abused, and to the point where I woke up and literally went online and checked my work email, because I'd given my clients my work email in the case of an emergency if they needed to reach out to me, and was checking my work email to find out if I had gotten something from them. And so that one definitely was a hard one, because that I find that for my clients, the holidays are a real mixed bag. A lot of them do not look forward to the holiday breaks because there's a lot of pain or a lot of other negative family stuff that's associated with the holidays, and not being in school and being forced to be at home. And honestly, some of the expectations that they have, their dreams and their desires to be able to have a loving experience, to be able to have the quote unquote holiday where people are coming together or there's great gifts or that kind of thing. And for a lot of people, I've found, especially in the school systems, the behaviors and the pain and an increase in mental health triggers are pretty significant around the holidays.
A couple of things going on there. I mean, I'll go back to the dream thing in a minute, but
yeah.
One is there's such a nostalgia in society for how great the holidays are, whether it's, you know, the Norman Rockwell Thanksgiving painting, you know, around the table, grandma and grandpa and the whole family's together. And there's a lot of nostalgia there for people to expectations to live up to, both from kids that wish love to have that kind of Thanksgiving, and for parents sometimes to try and put it on. Particularly when it brings extended family together. When extended family is lovely, it is lovely. I mean, it is beautiful when a family has a healthy dynamic. They know how to love each other. There's not a lot of anger, gossip, lying, deceit. But when there isn't a family, just like in a quote-unquote church setting where you find all those same things, when the dynamics are healthy, they're very good.
Yeah.
And when they're not healthy, it's incredibly destructive. And I think for families who have this societal nostalgia for this lovely family sweet holiday, and yet most families are pretty dysfunctional and broken. And so families have to go hang out together and oftentimes pretend they like each other, just get the meal in, the football game in the afternoon, whatever activity. And then everybody gets in the car and goes, thank God that's over. For problem with Thanksgiving, it's only over for another month.
Yeah. And then they got to come back together again.
It's already building up again for the next extension of it. And I get that, man, because I think it's really, really hard when family's not good. It's very painful. And when family's destructive, whether it's abusive stuff, like you're talking about physical abuse, if that puts you, but sometimes it's just spiritual abuse. It can be parents who are really judgmental against their kids because they don't quite do church in the same way, or maybe they're not even believers and the parents have got to convert them while they're home for Christmas again. And all the pressures on parents to feel like, gosh, this is a great day. I've got to try and get my kids back in the straight and narrow. That's a problem. If family's dynamics are horrible, if you've got a toxic personality or a narcissistic personality in your family who wants to control everything through lies and gossip, and your family's become an angry, unsafe place to be, I encourage people not to go. I really don't think you owe your family to be together with them if it's dangerous and hurtful, and if it's not a loving, safe environment. Stay away and stay guiltlessly away. You don't have to have a lot of guilt, like, oh, I should be doing this. On this day of all days, I should be able to pretend I love my family. And you may genuinely love your family.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't love you back, if there's no open-hearted, loving invitation, kindness, graciousness, if that's gone the way of the world, and it's just hostility and bitterness and pretense. My family's been through some of that myself, just been through siblings and others and pastimes where we just, and I hate that. I hate the Christmases where people who are out of sorts with the family making all kinds of judgments against it that aren't true, coming out of some broken pain in their life. But then everybody sits in the room and pretends like everything's wonderful.
Yeah.
I hate that.
As you were saying, you were making that comment and giving people permission to not go. The first reaction in my gut was, and yet the guilt, right? There's this deep sense of guilt, of obligation, of, well, I should, right? Like, I should go. I need to be a part of this. Like, why, you know, it's family, so I've just got to suck it up and deal with it, that type of thing, that type of mentality. What are your thoughts, or how would you encourage someone who has a family system that probably isn't the most healthy for them to be a part of, or a loving situation for them to be a part of, and yet they don't want to be lonely on the holidays?
Find another family to join. I would just say, hey, Mike, if you got close friends, if you got people in your life, Sarah and I often have at our table people who are just friends who don't have a place to go, aren't part of, or in a difficult family network and just need to hang out with a healthy family for a while. And so I would just say, make your need known. I get that it might be a lonely day, but a lonely day is better than a destructive day. It just is. One of the things I think it helps is to ask Jesus about, where do I need to be for the holidays? Not assume I need to be with my family. That's my responsibility. I mean, I would always encourage people to lean into that. If things are not destructive and it's kind of not the best day in the world, but I'm going to go hang out and hopefully maybe that opens doors to better relationships down the road, even though you might've been doing it for 50 years and it never gets better. I get that. But sometimes it's just, you know, suck it up and go is an answer.
Yeah.
But if it's destructive, genuinely, you come away wounded or just unwilling to play the game anymore, your family dynamics play. And particularly destructive dynamics. And there's, you know, there's people who are difficult and dangerous. And I think some of the worst people are those who gossip about you behind your back and get in a family thing and are all smiles and kindness. It's even worse. I wish you'd treat me here like you treat me behind my back, because then it would be real and honest and we could deal with it.
Exactly.
Instead, we're all going to smile and make nice. And we're, particularly if you're a Christian family, we're all going to celebrate Jesus and pray together. And it's all a bunch of fraudulent garbage. And when it is, that's why I say when it's good, it's very good. I mean, we sit down with our family now, and I've taken to last few family dinners asking a provocative question, and no one can leave the table until they've answered it. And one of my granddaughters even prepared this time for the question, thinking it was going to be something about being thankful, and it wasn't. It was completely off the map, and it caught everybody off guard. But it really turns out to be some of the best conversation around our table. I may get way off the question, but sometimes people are answering it for others at the table. Like I was asking, what didn't you know a year ago that you know now that's made your life better?
Ooh.
And some people had a hard time coming up with it, but then someone else at the table would, well, I think you've learned this. And then the other would, oh, yeah. And it was, I love the conversations that it spawns. I'm already trying to think of something freaky for Christmas, because I like that my granddaughter was trying to prepare and went, Grandpa, that's the wrong question. I love that. I love that. Maybe I'll start letting them ask the questions, because that would be more fun too. Yeah, I love that kind of, so it's healthy. It's like really good.
Yeah.
But when, and I've been at tables too like this, where there's anger, animosity, but no one's letting it out. Everyone's pretending. Or there's expectations and anger that kind of creep out in passive aggressive ways, because that's how you do it on the holidays. There's that shame from grandma or mom or whatever. If you don't act the right way at the table, don't come, don't stay long enough, don't. Those family dynamics are destructive. So asking Jesus, what do you have for me here? And if it's not there, where else might I go? Who would you give me? And I would say, man, a walk with Jesus in a park would be better.
Yeah.
Than going into a very dysfunctional family situation, particularly when you've got to go home and recover from that for a few hours. If you can go home and just shine it off and get back to your world, then it probably is not that destructive. But if it wounds your soul for a while and it takes hours or days to recover, I would just say, beg off nicely. Just say, hey, I'm sorry, we can't make it this year, whatever. And then in more honest times, probably not around the meal or the dinner or the holiday itself, but somewhere down the road, say, you know what? the reason we didn't come Christmas is because it's gotten very difficult, and this is why. And I'm wondering if our family can find something more healthy. Now, most families, that's like dropping a bomb on it, man.
Oh, yeah.
And if it is, it is. I don't know what to say. I just think life's too short to waste time on people that are hurtful and destructive and unrepentant and ungrowing. You know, somebody can struggle with darkness and be loved, and that's okay. And sometimes people are the darkness,
yeah,
and they add it to the mix. And then it's time, and I've had to do this in my own family at times. I've had to just step away and say, look, I'm not part of that as long as that's the game everyone else is playing. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it comes up on holidays and you feel it because people that were in your life are not in your life that used to be in your life. And you feel it a little more, but I think that's just part of bearing that before God and holding that suffering with him and let him love you in the midst of whether it's loneliness or just grief that you've lost people you love deeply who don't know how to love you back in a way that's meaningful, then grieve with him. He does that well too.
I love that question. And I think that's a hard, in some regards, I'm thinking about my family, and that would be a hard question to ask if the answer wasn't my family, because especially on the, well, honestly, on both sides of the family, there's definitely an expectation that you're going to spend X amount of time with the family. That is the expectation, that it's going to be with the extended family. Like, for example, I'm pretty sure I completely missed a nudge over when I was there in Arizona on Thanksgiving. There was an Asian immigrant woman who was retired, who lived right next door, who had just gotten her citizenship, and she swung by. And I felt this sense that I needed to ask Jess's grandparents if she had anybody to be with for Thanksgiving. And I didn't ask. And that was just one of those, thinking back to it, I should have asked. I should have said, and I didn't, because it was like, well, you know, this isn't my house. This isn't my party. I can't be inviting other people. You know, that was my internal response. And yet it was like, no, I should have just asked. There's no harm in asking if the single woman next door who just got her citizenship has somebody that she can spend Thanksgiving with or not. And if she doesn't, then can she come over? You know, and so... So that was, you know, that was a nudge that I didn't listen to. That
would have been awesome.
Yeah, I should have asked.
Even if the host said, you know what, let's just keep it our family today. And you go, okay, well, that's up to you. But yeah, even if that does, that may open up a sensitivity to them about their neighbor for other things.
Yes.
So it's not always like the nudge I have has to happen. It just is, yeah, follow through on the ask. And when I'm in someone's home, they get to decide everything. It's their home. So I don't mind saying, hey, I've got this thought. Just this lady, what do you think? Man, we could celebrate her citizenship and sharing her Thanksgiving today and whatever. I'd love to do that with Lewis.
Yeah. Where is he at with that? I know that's a bit of a side tangent, but.
No, it's a big process. And they're right now trying to apply for amnesty for the time he's got the first part of approved. Now they're trying to apply for amnesty for the time he's been here illegally, which is another. That's the big ask. And
okay,
if he can get amnesty for that. And he's got a lot of good reasons to have amnesty for that. So we're hopeful, but who knows? We've had Lewis and Marie and their family over for Thanksgiving with us. You know, we look at people around always. And I think it's a good ask for a lot of people. If you're hosting and maybe your gathering's kind of small, maybe you're far from family, it's a good time to ask, who else does God want us to be with today? And who would be blessed to be at our table? Who would be thankful to be there? And that's a great time to invite people in to that kind of connection.
That's the space of, okay, Lord, like what connections, what relationships, what adventures do you potentially have for us here? Because I mean, that was, for example, we would always open up our home to the international students when we were working at the college. And it was wonderful. Like, most of them had no concept of what Thanksgiving was or had a Thanksgiving meal, because that wasn't something that was celebrated in their country. And yet to be able to pass on and be able to invite them into good conversation and hospitality and just joy, I mean, but man, we had some great times having the international students be a part of that with us.
Yeah, that is cool. And that can make up for a lot of lack in our own hearts about people that you know, we feel lonely or we feel distant, man, invite people in. Fill your life with people. It's always a good thing to do. But when it's painful, I think that's more the talk we're having. I found this on the day after Thanksgiving on a friend of mine's Facebook post. And honestly, I think he's quoting me, honestly, if I remember the conversation right. But there's more he says about it. The quote is, the only way to win is to quit playing the game. If they don't love you now, they won't love you then. You can quit now. And I think that's something I said to him at one point. He said, what restful words spoken from a dear friend of mine when I needed it most. Love is in the heart of the lover in the same way beauty is in the eye of the beholder. You cannot make someone love you by meeting their expectations. Even if you appear to succeed, you only strengthen their illusions of what love truly is. Isn't that an amazing statement? Ooh. Man, if you have to meet expectations to be loved, and I have people in my extended family who are like that, there's a certain way you have to be. And if you're not like that, we get to be angry. We get to hold you in contempt. We get to, and it's just, for the first part, I said, okay, expectations are minor. I'll try to meet them. But when you meet them, you're only supporting the illusion that love can be earned, that they can use love as a weapon against you. And the only way to win the game, I don't like the word win there. If I said this, if he's quoting me, I wouldn't say I'm trying to win the game. The only way to keep them from losing the game is to quit playing the game. Because I think the people playing the game are the ones being the most dehumanized.
Yeah.
And for them to win, you have to stop playing the game. And I know it's counterintuitive. The idea is, what do you mean? They're getting away with it. I know you can say all that. Yeah, they're getting away with it. And they are for a time. But you know what? When you meet someone's expectation to earn their love, you're disfiguring them. And I think that's reason why you get to step away and say, no, it's not going to work. He goes on to say this, affection based on met expectations, conditions, or performance is not love at all. It is mutual accommodation of self-need at best. It's like a business transaction that leaves both parties shorted just enough to survive until the next transaction, which describes a lot of holiday meals, right?
Yes.
We're just going to survive this, go home and try and survive the next one, while never reaching the hunger we all have to love and be loved for who we are, an ever-expanding gift that is its own reward. You know, what you can give to your family, because they are family, moms, dads, brothers, sisters, try to connect, try to be generous. I think that's all wonderful until it becomes destructive to them as much as to you. And I love this mutual accommodation of self-need. That's Dave Coleman's, my co-author of So You Don't Want a Church Anymore, which, by the way, he's hanging on the edge of glory even as we speak. Mm-hmm. I'm expecting a call shortly. And he's going to wake up into that for which he has always dreamed at some point in the next few days, probably. So I'm going to miss Dave a ton around here. He's the one that came up with that. Mutual accommodation of self-need is what mostly we think love is. You give me what I want. It's transactional. It's destructive. It doesn't work. And I like Harvey wrote this on Facebook. I like what he says about once you try and meet those expectations, you've joined the game. And the game doesn't serve anyone well. And sometimes you just have to say, I'm not playing this game anymore. Until something changes there, don't expect me to be back. And that's not the passive aggressive, I'm hurt and going to stay home. If that's what you're going through, that's a different thing. I think it's a very reasoned choice to say, yeah, this is too hurtful. I'm not going to play this game with you guys anymore. And I hope you want us back, because I'm sitting here with my family. I'm always ready to reconnect with family if health returns, if people can make an apology for where they've wronged and hurt others, if they can own what's going on and seek change, I'm always in. I'm in with everybody who's ever dealt a tough blow to me. I'm all about the reconciliation. I would love that to happen, but I'm not willing to capitulate to their demands for a faked reconciliation. Reconciliation is owning in our hearts the pain we've caused and sharing it freely with others in an environment that's safe to explore it, where people can own what they need to own, apologize for what they need to apologize for. And almost always that's mutual, because no one ever is perfect in any relationship. You're just not. But people who take advantage of mistakes in relationship to make it, hold it as a weapon over your head, people who don't get that there are misunderstandings at time, even in families, and a simple misunderstanding is just a misunderstanding. It doesn't unveil a deeper motive or whatever. And I think if you can, you can. And if you can keep a heart that says, look, if that ever becomes more healthy, I'm in. I'd love to be in. There's not a person in my family that I don't love and I wish we had better relationships with when they get broken. But sometimes you can't fix them on your own. You just can't. It takes two.
So then how do you know as, I guess, how would you recognize if one of the things that you need to do, circling back to what you mentioned about dropping a bomb, what if part of it is that you need to step in and you need to make that comment, or you need to be the catalyst that says, hey, I want to press into whatever the discomfort is, or the pain or the sorrow or whatever the unhealth or brokenness is in that situation, saying, I don't want to sweep this under the rug anymore. I actually want to bring this up because what I want is for this family system, this family unit of people to be more healthy. And so sweeping it under the rug and saying, well, we only see each other a few times a year, so why rock the boat? Why put any ripples in the water? You know, and yet your desire is for health. So how do you navigate that one?
Well, I like what you start out with when you need to. You really need to confront. And my thing would be, why do you need to?
Yeah.
That'd be something to probe. Because if the need is internal, I need to fix this, I need to, it's not going to go well. You end it with, I desire to fix this, which I love that much, much better. Because if it's a need to fix, then you're a fixer and it's not going to go well. If there's a desire, I think you find the person who you think can make the choices that need to be made. Like, I wouldn't sit down at Thanksgiving meal and say, listen, this family sucks. And you guys are a bunch of frauds. And Sarah and I are not coming back here if something doesn't change. I never do it there. It's completely, even if it's at your home, at your table. But I think you can during the year just say, hey, you know what? That for a long time, this family's kind of teetered on the edge of some real destructive behavior. And I'm wondering if there's a conversation that would help us move to something more healthy. That's how I'd approach it. And I'd approach it one at a time with, you know, people that I think are players in that. I've done that, honestly, and gotten yelled at, you know, because my family dynamic growing, I mean, we triangulated a lot. My mom enjoyed doing that. And then as brothers have gotten older and separated in various ways of life and brought in sisters-in-law that aren't always part of the same family dynamic, but our family dynamic has always been about fear, control, and manipulation. And I know people look at the Jacobsons going, what a lovely family. It's the epitome of what a Christian family could be. And on the outside, yeah, it sometimes has looked like that.
Yeah.
But beneath the surface, for a long time, it has not been that. It's been negotiating the anger and angst and accusations, and you can make nice for the most part. So the need to fix it, I don't have the need. Whenever I scratch that surface, either with a sibling or parent or whatever, these days it used to get kind of a willing to explore a little bit. Now it's full on no, and anger. I'm the problem, and I've been accused of things that I love that I've been accused of things that are absolutely absurd. It's not like I've been accused of things that my brokenness or a misunderstanding could have contributed to. It's not that. It's complete fabricated lies that people now believe. And so even to say, hey, could we back up and talk about this? No, we can't. And it's just anger. That's when you say, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done till that passes. And the interesting is you find out when you're not around and how much gossip goes on that, you know what? You find out how loved you are or aren't. It's not like you're missed. It's not like people care that you're not there. It's not like they're willing to say, gosh, maybe we made some mistakes here. Could we talk about this? No, the anger perpetuates, the accusations perpetuate and get more absurd, even more absurd. I'm being accused of stuff and I go, oh my gosh, it just goes on. And what helps me at times like that is I have close people to hammer this out with. I have people I sit down with going, okay, this is what's going on. This is what I'm feeling. This is what they're saying. And I get people look over my shoulder and go, yeah, you know what? Maybe you're missing something here, or maybe you're right on here. And that input's really, really helpful to set you at rest in the Father's love. But I love this comment about just when you realize your family's playing a dysfunctional game of manipulation and intrigue and anger and drawing lines. And if you don't cross a certain line, you will not be loved here. That is an unhealthy family, whether it's a church situation, whether it's a business group, whether it's where you work or where you live or your extended family. And I really think life's too short to spend time with people who don't love you and are trying to destroy you. And there's no guilt in stepping away from that.
Part of what you hinted at too, Wayne, is that it also requires, I think, a little bit more relational engagement. Because that's another part of this that I feel like it can be one of the challenges, is when there's no relational context except for the holidays every couple of years, where, you know, there's very little family connection, there's very little conversation, you're not doing life together at all. And what you're pointing to is saying, hey, look, I value this family. I hope to see these relationships grow and prosper and deepen in their context. But that also says, okay, I need to be doing more life with them than just on the holidays or the occasional phone call. Because if you don't have that relational context, I don't even know how I would approach that conversation, right? Like if I only see these individuals and talk to these individuals once every couple of years, then it's going to be a lot harder to move towards a healthier space in that relationship than if they're actually a part of my daily, or at least my radar of life and family.
I don't know. It would help a lot if we had some connection with that. But that's all part of, you know, you really don't choose your friends. I know people say you do, but there's things that happen in relate. Like when I travel, there's people you connect with where there's just an immediate connection and friendship, and you could explore that and grow if they live nearby. People I meet here, there's people I meet here that I enjoy. We had a great time, but there's no, that's not probably going on to anything.
Yeah.
To force that on family is tough. I think family is kind of like you're conscripted into a family. You didn't choose it. You got stuck there. Well, if your family's fun and engaging, then that will grow and that'll be wonderful and that'll be live. And I find that with my family. I find everybody engaging in their own way until they start playing this game of judgment and manipulation and anger and accusation. Then you go, okay, well, that's no fun.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to spend time trying to engage what is hostile and holding animosity and can rise to anger just because I say, hey, you know, I've got a concern here. And then immediately there's anger. So I don't think there's a responsibility to be close with your family. Jesus talked about, you know, caring for your dad and your mom and honor your father and mother. That's in the scriptures a lot. Mm-hmm. There's also the stuff in scripture about let the dead bury the dead. God wants to go back and bury his father. Let the dead bury the dead. Or, you know, unless a man loves me, loves the kingdom more than his family, is willing to hate his own mother and brother and father. So there's also language that says the reality of the kingdom transcends your family. Mm-hmm. And I know that's hard for families to hear, but I think when you go on a journey with Jesus, your first loyalty is not to your family. It's to him. It's to what he's doing in you. It's to the people he's bringing into your life. And when he's bringing in healthy connections, great. If you can have those with your family, so much the better.
Yeah.
But if you can't, if there's such broken, and I think families are always the worst healers for each other. You know, it's hard in a friendship. I find friendships are a lot easier to sit down and say, hey, I'm struggling here. Or you seem to be angry here. What's going on? There's ability to talk it out. Families, and I don't know if it's just, you know, baggage left over from childhood and sibling rivalries and, you know, ways family dynamics have been for some. I don't know if it's a history. I don't know what it is. But families are almost always more defensive, more difficult to kind of walk out those kinds of conversations with.
Yeah.
I would be advised, man, if it's not a safe place for you to have that conversation, don't have it. And I would say to people who listen to the podcast who want to have a safe family, do what you can to create the safe space in which your family, your children, your children's children can disagree and love each other and care about each other and get past problems and brokenness. And one of those things is don't let gossip grow. Once gossip grows, once a sibling, once my son comes to me and tells me things he doesn't like about my daughter, I've got a problem.
Yeah.
Right, he's going to triangulate me. Now I've got to choose between the two, and I wouldn't do it. My Fortunately, my daughter and son get along great, and they don't see each other often now that he's moved away to Denver. But when we do get together, it's all fun and good. But if my daughter came to me or my son came to me to complain about the other, my first thing would be, well, stop right there. I really can't hear you.
Yeah.
You need to talk to them. And I want you two to work this out because I love you both. I care about you both. I'm not going to step in between you.
Yeah.
Because once you choose sides in a sibling rivalry as a parent, even if you think one is completely right and the other is completely wrong, the fact that you know that, the fact that you feel like you have enough information to make that judgment is the problem. And I can't say that more loudly. It is the problem that you need to let them work it out, love them both, be in their lives as love. So create the family environment where if someone's got a struggle with me as the dad, come talk to me. Or a brother, or my father is a son, whatever. Come talk to me, but come talk to me reasonably and rationally. If you're going to yell at me, we're not going to get anywhere because that you just want me to conform to your view of the world, and I don't have your view of the world.
For me, one of the internal struggles around the holidays is that my family of origin, there was a high emphasis placed on family first, and your family is the closest. And so even to talk about, and for the most part, my family has a fairly strong connection with Christ on their own individual levels. And yet to pause and say, no, the first place that I need to be going is saying, Lord, where do you want Jess and I to spend the holidays? Where do you want us? What relationships do you want us to pour into? What do you have for us here? That, like, if I was to verbalize that, I don't know how well that would go over. The lip service would be, well, yeah, of course. But then if that ever was to challenge the family getting together or make it impossible for everybody to come together at one time during the holiday season or whatnot, that would definitely cause some conflict. I think that's a really intriguing piece that I need to just do some more exploration on, is this sense or this expectation that you have to be close with family, because that was definitely an emphasis. And in some regards, it was a good one, because my parents made our siblings sort through things and figure things out. And largely because me and my siblings were the only people that we had. I mean, when you grow up on a ranch that's 30 miles from the nearest gas station, that's, you know, you've just got your siblings. And so either you sort it out or you're a loner, one of the two. That was a big value system that was placed in our family. And yet, I think you're right. You know, there's some people in my family that I can go to and really process and hash things out, but there's others that I can't. It just, there isn't that relational depth or that ability to be able to do that for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I would really hesitate to use the God card as the trump card in any kind of family discussion.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't say I've had people do it to me. God told me to tell you this. And I just go, you know what? Once you're going to pull the God card, you don't treat
the conversation's over. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're telling your mom and dad, listen, God's led us to spend time with these other people who love us more than you do, that's not a good conversation. No. That's never going to bear fruit. So no. If you do have the conversation with God, say, who do you want us to be with? Then you're just saying to your family, someone, hey, you know what? We're going to have to beg off this year. We had some other things come up and I'm sorry we can't make it. That's all you're going to say. You're not going to say, hey, God gave us a better way to go here and you're not it, or anything else like that, because that's going to always be a problem.
Well, and it wouldn't be something that I would say to that, like you said, I wouldn't pull the God card, but even for me in my relationship with Jess and her and I positioning ourselves as a couple and asking God that, there's going to be those expectations of those obligations in the back of my mind that I'm wrestling with that would challenge my freedom to be able to pause and really ask God what he would have for the season and who he would want me to spend it with.
Yeah. And if your family is an obligation, that's already pointing to an issue, right? I don't spend time with my kids and grandkids as an obligation. I'm endeared to them. And I think the kingdom is always, where is your heart endeared? Go that way. And if your family is an obligation, you might sit down and ask why. Why is it an obligation? Why am I not endeared to my family? There may be bad reasons you're not endeared, and God can show you and heal some stuff in your heart. There may be good reasons you're not endeared. And that could be all God just saying, yeah, that's just not the place I have for you right now. Because that's kind of a, because many families are, face it, many families are very destructive, and the relationships between parents and siblings can be horrid. And this idea that we have to keep pretending, I think is just nuts. And I know parents are going to hear this and other people are going to hear it and go, wow, you're crazy, man. They just need to be with their family. That's the most important thing. And people who say that, who are going to make you do it as an obligation, are part of the problem.
Yeah.
I would never want my children in my home because they have to be here. Because if not, dad would be hurt or mom would be hurt. I want them here because they love to be here and sit down at my table and we laugh and we play and we enjoy the day together, whether it's bocce ball or playing some kind of liar's thing around a card game or something, which we played this time around. Endearment is the currency of the kingdom. God wants to endear us and the people I'm endeared to. And say, well, Wayne, that's just being selfish. If you're a selfish person, yeah, your endearments will all be selfish. But if you're learning to live inside the kingdom, your endearments are going to be the places God has for you. He invites you in with joy, not obligates you with pain and obligation. And that's what religious institutions have done forever. We've switched the joy of the body of Christ for your obligation to do church, to not forsake the assembling of yourselves together, which is not what that verse means. But we've taken the beauty of this kingdom and what love does and how it changes us and changes our trajectory and changes the trail we're on. And the enemy's going to keep pushing us over, and religious people are going to do the same thing. This is what I was going to say earlier, too, when we talk about families.
Yeah.
I think the most dysfunctional families are very religious families. They don't just have different points of view. They one-up each other with, I know God better than you do, or God has shown me, or God has. Religious family, like you said all along, religion makes you relationally challenged. Brad and I have talked about it on the podcast forever, because it's true. And that's why those families find it difficult. But if you can find that space of endearment in your heart, then I think you're finding the space God wants you to live in. And you can do that with joy, even if there's pain in it and grief in it. And even if there's people you miss because they're just not in a place to love you well, enjoy that journey, because that's what God's invited us to.
That's the hard part, or the challenge is when there is endearment there, but then there's also underlying things, because it's not that I don't love spending time with my family here in the Wyoming, Nebraska area. Absolutely, I do. And yet I think it's a part of that process of God continuing to untangle things. And for me, it's pausing and asking God, okay, Lord, what needs to be untangled here? What's endearment? What's your kingdom? What's part of that relationship and just the joy of spending time with them? And what is that obligation or that sense of, if I don't, then I'm not meeting the family system expectations, and I don't want to play that game.
Yeah.
So what untangling the endearment versus the obligation and the expectation.
And also, what is abuse? And where I am abused, you can walk away from guiltlessly and see what else God has for you.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.